Okay, I want you to just close your eyes for a second. Imagine the ultimate gadget. I'm talking about a device that has the rock solid reliability of a high-end appliance, something you'd trust your life with.
Right.
But it also has the total immersion of a next-gen gaming console. Now, open your eyes. That gadget isn't in your living room. It's in your driveway.
And it's doing 60 miles per hour.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are exploring something that frankly sounds like science fiction, but is, well, it's just around the corner. We're talking about the Sony Aphila.
This is such a fascinating case study. It's the child of a joint venture between two absolute titans of industry, Sony and Honda. The venture is called Sony Honda Mobility.
And before anyone tunes out thinking this is just another car review about, torque curves and tire compound,
No.
stop. The mission for this deep dive is completely different. We are not just looking at a vehicle. We are looking at a fundamental shift in what a car actually is.
The sources we're digging into today really frame this as a shift from dead travel time, that feeling sitting in traffic, just frustrated,
Oh, I know it well.
to entertainment time. It's all about reclaiming those lost hours.
Looking at the specs and the analysis, my first thought was just cyberpunk. It feels like something straight out of a futuristic anime, but you had a slightly different, more strategic take on it.
The cool factor is definitely there. You can't deny it. But strategically, this car is trying to solve the single biggest problem facing modern electric vehicles.
Which is.
Well, right now, you have all these EV startups with incredible battery tech. They can go fast, they can go far, but their software,
It's usually a mess.
it often feels like you're beta testing it for them. It's buggy, it's laggy, the menus are confusing. Sony saw this gap. They realized the modern car is a computer on wheels. And while car companies are struggling to become tech companies, Sony. Well, Sony already is one.
And that brings us to this body versus soul concept from our reading, this really clear division of labor.
It's surgical. Usually in these partnerships, lines get blurred, but here it is crystal clear. Honda provides the body.
Which is pretty crucial because you can't just reboot your brakes if they crash.
Vital. Absolutely vital. So Honda handles the e-architecture, the suspension, the safety chassis, and all the after-sales service. One of our sources put it perfectly. It gives you the trust that the wheels won't fall off at 100 mover.
A feature I generally look for in a vehicle, yes.
Ideally. But then you have Sony providing the soul. They are responsible for the entire brain of the car, the infotainment, the autonomous driving AI, the chips, the whole user experience.
So to borrow that analogy from the analysis, it drives with the reliability of a Honda Civic, but it entertains you with the immersion of a Sony Bravia TV.
That's the pitch. And honestly, it's a compelling one.
Let's get inside this thing, because if Sony is the soul, the cabin is where that soul lives. And the description is, I mean, there are no physical buttons.
Almost none. When you open the door, you are stepping into a digital world. The dashboard is just dominated by this massive panoramic screen.
And it's not just a screen in the middle, right?
No, it stretches from the left pillar all the way to the right pillar. The entire dash is a screen.
And they didn't just slap some proprietary car OS on there, they went straight to Epic Games.
They're using Unreal Engine 5.3 for the whole user interface.
Which is huge. We are not just talking about some crisp icons here.
Not at all. We're talking about a live, dynamic environment. The source material says the 3D map on your dashboard actually reflects the real-world weather if it's raining outside.
It's raining on your dashboard display.
In real time, rendered by the Unreal Engine, the lighting effects are dynamic. The navigation map doesn't look flat. It looks like an open-world RPG.
It's blurring the lines.
That's the key phrase. The source has kept coming back to that. It blurs the line between real life and simulation. It turns the cabin into a mobile living room. You're not just operating a machine, you are inhabiting a digital space.
Speaking of digital spaces, let's talk power. Because if you're running Unreal Engine and potentially full-blown games, you need some serious silicon under the hood.
You do. And this is where the architecture gets really interesting. It's all running on the Qualcomm Snapdragon Ride Flex SoC.
The Ride Flex part sounds important.
It is. So normally in a car, you have separate chips for these serious driving stuff, the safety systems and the fun infotainment stuff. You keep them physically separate.
So your movie doesn't crash your brakes. Seems smart.
It is, but it's expensive and it's complex. The Snapdragon Ride Flex, it handles both of those workloads at the same time on a single chip family.
Wait, how is that safe?
It uses something called a mixed criticality architecture. It basically isolates the safety-critical tasks from the entertainment tasks within the same hardware. They're completely firewalled from each other.
That sounds like a massive technical hurdle, but I guess it lets them pack in some serious graphical horsepower.
Exactly. Home console-level power without filling the trunk with server racks.
So, with all that power, how does the gaming actually work? Am I bringing my PS5 discs into the car?
Huh. Not exactly. They've outlined two main ways to play. First, there's remote play. The car has 5G, so you can connect to your PlayStation 5 at home and stream your games right to the car.
So I can literally continue my game exactly where I left off.
Correct. But they're also working on native gaming, which is running titles directly on the car's hardware. And of course, it has native support for the DualSense controllers.
The TS5 controllers.
Yep. You just jump in, grab the controller, and you're good to go.
Now, passengers have had screens for years, right? Minivans had drop-down TVs in the 90s. What's actually different here?
The difference is the ecosystem and how they partition that giant screen. The front passenger gets their own dedicated screen zone. So while you're driving, focusing on the map, the person next to you could be playing Horizon Forbidden West.
That sounds incredible for road trips.
And think about the charging scenario.
Yeah.
That's the big pain point for EV owners, right? You stop to charge, you've got 20, 30 minutes to kill. In the Afeela, you put it in park, and that whole panoramic screen becomes a massive, ultra-wide monitor for everyone in the car.
I can honestly see myself looking forward to a traffic jam, just pulling over, playing GTA VI while I wait for it to clear.
It totally changes the value proposition of waiting.
Okay, but there's a physics problem here. If I'm staring at a fixed screen, playing a high-speed game while the car itself is moving, turning, hitting potholes, my inner ear is going to revolt. That sounds like a recipe for motion sickness.
The vomit comet, yeah. It's the silent killer of in-car entertainment. And that's actually where Honda's side of the partnership becomes so critical.
Ah, so the suspension is actually designed for gamers.
In a way, yes. The sources detail a double wishbone front and a multi-link rear suspension. And the specific goal they mention is to make the ride stable and smooth enough that you can game without getting sick.
That is some serious next-level attention to detail.
It's the difference between a tech company trying to build a car and a car company building a car, you know. Honda knows how to dampen the exact frequencies that trigger nausea.
So what about the actual driving performance? Is this thing fast?
It's respectable. It's a dual-motor all-wheel drive putting out about 483 horsepower. It'll do 0 to 60 in around 4.8 seconds.
Which is quick. I mean, that's faster than most things on the road.
It is quick, but it's not insane. And that's a deliberate choice. The analysis points out they're not chasing the Tesla Model S plan. They're not trying to break land speed records. They're chasing luxury comfort.
And because if you launch from 0 to 60 in 2 seconds, you're definitely spilling your coffee and dropping your controller.
Precisely. It's all about a smooth, powerful, consistent ride. The battery is a 91 kilowatt hour pack, 150 kilowatt fast charging. So, you know, solid competitive stats.
Okay, so we've got the soul inside, the body underneath. Let's talk about the face. Because the exterior has a feature that I think is going to be incredibly divisive. The media bar.
The media bar.
Yes. Describe this for us.
So the car itself has this very sleek, polished spaceship silhouette. But right between the front headlights, there's a narrow digital display strip.
A screen on the bumper.
Essentially, yeah. And it has two functions. One is practical communication. Yep. It can display text to pedestrians, like crossing safe, to let someone know the car sees them.
Okay, that's useful, but that's not the fun part.
No, the fun part is personalization. The source says you can skin your car.
This is the part I can see people going crazy over. The idea that I could pull up to a gaming convention
and have the Spider-Man logo just glowing on the front of your car.
Or a Fortnite clan tag.
But there's a more serious side to it. It's the solution to what some call the eye contact problem.
The what?
In a future with more autonomous cars, a pedestrian can't look at the driver to see if they're stopping or waving them across.
Yeah.
The car needs a face to communicate its intent. Yeah. Sony just made that face customizable.
That actually makes a lot of sense. It turns the vehicle into a social avatar.
And sets it apart from just being another white blob in traffic.
Now, we talked about Honda and the safety chassis, but Sony brought their own legacy to the safety table, too. And this surprised me. I didn't realize how big Sony was in the sensor game.
Oh, massive. Sony is the world's largest manufacturer of CMOS camera sensors. If you have a high-end smartphone, odds are the sensor is from Sony.
So they basically turn this car into a giant camera array.
45 sensors, to be exact, including a LiDAR bar on the roof for 3D mapping. But what really caught my eye was the internal monitoring.
The stuff inside the cabin.
Right. They use time of flight or TOF. sensors inside. They monitor driver alertness, which is pretty standard. But here's the Sony touch. The system can use lip reading.
Lip reading. That sounds a little invasive.
It does, but it's meant to solve the cocktail party problem.
Which is when you're trying to isolate one voice from a lot of background noise.
Exactly. You're in the car, road noise is loud, maybe the kids are screaming, and the voice assistant can't understand you. This system watches your mouth move to mathematically isolate your commands from all that chaos.
Okay, so it's functional but still a little creepy. And speaking of visuals, they're using AR navigation, right?
The Gran Turismo feature. It's straight out of the game. It projects navigation arrows onto the windshield with a heads-up display, but it overlays them on the real road, so you see a virtual racing line showing you exactly where to turn.
I feel like that would incentivize me to treat my commute like a time trial.
It certainly gives you the tools for it.
So this all sounds incredibly impressive. It also sounds expensive. And it sounds far away. What are the logistics here? When can I actually buy one?
It's closer than you think. Pre-orders are set to open in mid-2025.
That's practically tomorrow in car development years.
And deliveries are scheduled for spring 2026. North America gets them first, actually.
And the damage to the wallet, what are we looking at?
Estimates are around $45,000 for the base model, going up to maybe $80,000 for the top trim with all the autonomous bells and whistles.
You know, for a rolling PS5, $45,000 is not as crazy as I thought it would be, considering the EV market.
It's competitive. It's a premium car for sure, but it's in the ballpark.
So who is this actually for? The inspector's verdict in our source material was pretty specific.
It was. They said this is for people who care more about teraflops and screen resolution than cylinders and exhaust notes.
That's a great line.
It really sums it up.
Yeah.
If you're a traditional petrol head who wants to feel the engine vibrate, this is not your car. This is for the digital native, the person who sees their car as just another device in their ecosystem.
It's about reclaiming that lost time.
Exactly. It's a mobile living room for people in heavy traffic cities, Los Angeles, Dubai, you name it. If you're going to be stuck in a metal box for 2 hours a day, shouldn't that box at least entertain you?
It turns traffic from a waste of time into bonus gaming time. I love it. But before we go, I want to leave you with one last thought. We talked about that media bar, the screen on the bumper.
Yeah.
It sounds fun, putting your clan tag on there. But think about how people behave on the internet, and then think about how people behave in traffic.
That is a volatile combination.
Right. If our cars become these giant mobile avatars for us, does road rage change? Does it get better because you can flash a sorry message on your bumper? Or does it get worse when you see a rival gaming clan tag on the car in front of you?
That is a terrifying and fascinating thought.
Something to mull over the next time you're stuck in traffic, staring at a blank bumper. That's it for this deep dive into the Sony Aphila. Thanks for riding shotgun with us.
Drive safe, everyone.
Catch you on the next one.